Okay. We're doing the Drashot Aran, we're up to page Kuf Yud Daled in the Shalem edition, Resh Nun Zayin in the Mosad Erev Kook edition. The Ran had been discussing, the source of the whole speech was the quote from Avos to Rabbi Nosson, which is quoted in Chagiga, that Rabbi Yochanan ben Broka and Rabbi Lazar Chisma went to visit Rabbi Yoshua when he was lying on his deathbed, and he asked him, what did you guys learn today? And they told him about the drasha about Hakel, and they told him about the drasha that the words of Torah, although they seem to go in different directions, they're all stemming from one place, they were all given by Hashem. And then he started discussing, so how does this work? If Hashem taught it, then how could you have two opposite conclusions? How can you say that things going in different directions are all stemming from Hashem? And he went on to discuss the Machlokas, Rabbi Eliezer, and the sages, that Rabbi Yoshua stood up on his feet and he said, God, you taught us Lo Bashamayni, the Torah is not in heaven, you gave us the rules to work with, and even though technically in heavens you agree with Rabbi Eliezer, and if we were to go by those indications, we would have to rule like Rabbi Eliezer. Nonetheless, being that our logic and our use of the laws of derivation, the way you taught us, God, lead us to a different conclusion, we have to go with the conclusion that we understand. That's how you told us to rule in Torah. And with this understanding, we can understand also what the Talmud tells us, that Rabbi Bar Nachmani was sitting on that trunk, and he heard the argument in heaven, does the white spot that shows up, and there's a white hair, so we know if the white spot preceded the white hair, then it's tzaras, he's tamei. If the white hair preceded the tzaras, the white spot, then it's tahor. What happens if you're not sure which came first? So then what does the kohen do? So then God says it's tahor, and the whole academy in heaven says it's tamei. That's what Rabbi Bar Nachmani is hearing. And the angel of death couldn't catch up to Rabbi Bar Nachmani. So what did he do? Rabbi Bar Nachmani was on the run from the authorities and made it seem like a whole battalion was coming with horses. And Rabbi Bar Nachmani, who was in the middle of learning and listening to this argument going on in heaven, and in heaven they said, let's ask Rabbi Bar Nachmani because no one like him knows the laws of Taharos. So Rabbi Bar Nachmani sees the troops catching up to him. It's all a vision that he sees. That's what the angel of death had him see. So he gives up. So he says, God, let me die. I've had it. And the angel of death comes to take him. And as he's about to drop dead, he says, Taho, Taho, but I rule like God. I say it's Taho. And the heavenly voice comes out and says, Rabbi Bar Nachmani, you're pure and your soul is pure. So that's what the Gemara tells us. And on that Gemara, he said, we have to understand what's going on here. So you have the souls after they departed from the body. The souls in heaven are in this academy. We call the Academy of Heaven. And they're learning the laws of blemishes. What do they care? They don't have such a concept as tzaras. And secondly, if they're being told that God says it's tahor, how come they disagree? How could they say, no, we don't think so? And they need Rabbi Bar Nachmani to tell them what the halacha is. God says this way, the Academy of Heaven says that way, Rabbi Bar Nachmani is going to rule. So he says, in order to understand this, we have to begin differently. We have to understand that although the soul is spiritual and not physical, nonetheless, the soul does come down and live in a physical body. And the Garden of Eden is down below, he says. The Garden of Eden is a physical place. Because you cannot go from having a soul connected to a body directly to a state of being completely spiritual. There's like a stop in between. And so originally, the soul has lived in a human body, and then it goes to a place that's something in between called the Garden of Eden, which is a better place than the rest of Earth, just like the land of Israel is better than everywhere else on Earth. And you can understand this, he says, based on this concept, you understand what happens in the story of in the Gemara in Brachos, where Shmuel goes looking for his father who passed away, and he says, I'm looking for my father. Remember, Ba'ina Abba, I'm looking for my father, his name's Abba. and he says, based on this concept, we also understand why Yaakov buries Rachel outside the land of Israel, even though he was just a few footsteps away. Why didn't he take her to be buried inside Israel? Because if the children of Israel pass by her grave, where he buried her, so then she will pray over them. So he says, okay, you see here that the place that a person's buried, well, the soul is more connected to that. It's not like after a person dies, the soul goes up to Shemaim and that's it. You just leave the body is there, the bones are there, but the soul has nothing to do with it. No, there is a connection. The soul does remain connected to planet Earth in certain ways. You see the idea that if they pass by her gravesite, then she'll daven for them. And we could add to that, the Medrash says, why wasn't Moshe buried in a known place? So the Medrash says, because if we would know where Moshe was buried and we would go daven there, then the Mashiach would come. If we would only daven where Moshe is buried, then we could get so many powerful things from that prayer. So Hashem says, I can't leave his burial place known. So you see that that there is an element where the soul remains connected to where the body is buried. So remember, where did he begin his question? His question was, how could it be that in heaven they say the halacha is like Rabbi Eliezer and the rabbis disagree? And then you have the story of Rabbi Bar Nachmani, where in heaven the rabbis are disagreeing with God. So he says, first of all, how could it be that the souls in heaven care about a blemish, a physical mitzvah of tzaras? And secondly, how could it be that they disagree with God? So firstly, he's developing the concept that souls, the soul of a person is still connected to earth after it passes away. It's not like it's completely severed. ולפיכך אין בזה תימה שתתעסק הנפש בחוכמות הגשמיות. So he says, so it's not so wondersome to say that the soul is also going to be busy with things that pertain to the physical world, because the soul is not completely detached from the physical world. מצורף אל זה, and you could add to that, כי באמת השכלים הנבדלים מהשפע השופע עליהם מהשם יתברך יתחייב שיהיה הסכם בחוכמת תמידי. When we speak about the spiritual things, what he calls השכלים הנבדלים, the concepts, the thoughts, the spiritual things, what we might call the angels, the soul, when we speak about spiritual things that get their abundance from above, so then logic dictates that they are consistently dealing with things that are spiritual, what we might call chokhmah. Schalim and Nivdalim, very often, the idea is, literally Schalim and Nivdalim means the brains that are separate from the physical world. So it doesn't mean brains, it means thoughts. That's why I initially translated it as concepts. But when we say concepts, it sounds like something that has no true representation. It's just a thought. That's why I said angels or souls, meaning what he means is chalim anivdalim is another way of saying the soul or the angel, something spiritual that has no representation in the physical world. But it's still existent. It's not like a concept that, when I think about it, so the concept exists, but there is nothing real. It's just a concept. Schalim and Nivdalim, though, very often is a reference to angels. When Rishonim used the term Schalim and Nivdalim, which seems to be a borrowed term from philosophers, they're referring to angels. Angels or the soul. Vehu umram tamid b'Talmud, and that's why you find throughout the Talmud that the Talmud mentions Metivta derekia, the Heavenly Academy. What's the Heavenly Academy? What do you mean? There's this yeshiva up there? He says, no. If you have something spiritual, you have a soul, what's that soul doing? Well, if it's spiritual, then it has to have connection to spirituality, which means that there's a constant there's constant activity. The soul is constantly dealing with something spiritual. What's spiritual in the world? Torah. So when we speak about the yeshiva in heaven, what we're really speaking about is that activity which the souls are busy with after they depart from the world, which is spirituality, which is Torah. The Talmud tells us, the Talmidei Chachamim, they never rest from Torah. In the end of Brachos, the Talmud says, Talmidei Chachamim are always working on Torah. They don't get the rest in this world, they don't get the rest in the world to come. They're always busy. Now that we understand that, we understand two concepts. A, that the soul after it departs is still dealing with spiritual concepts, so it's still dealing with Torah. B, that the soul after it departs is not completely severed from the physical world. It's connected in that it's connected to the place it's buried. It's connected, as we discussed, the Garden of Eden. So then it doesn't have to bother us that the soul will also deal with concepts that are physical, like a blemish, like tzaras. Now, the truth is, I don't know why he had to give the soul answer. To me, if it's a mitzvah, so then the fact that it's a mitzvah makes it spiritual. Every mitzvah pertains to the, almost every mitzvah pertains to the physical world. If I had to guess, I would add a few words to the Ran, but he doesn't say it. Meaning, I would say what's really bothering him, but again, this is me talking, not the Ran. What's really bothering, what would really bother me about this Gemara is a slightly different point. And again, he doesn't spell this out. So it's my interjection. If we have a blemish, then in heaven they know. Either the white spot came first, or the hair came first. What were they discussing in Shemayim? A case of a suffix. Well, in Shemayim you don't have sfeikos. In Shemayim they know. Either this came first or that came first. You want to tell me they came at the same time? You could tell me that. But that's not what it says. It says in heaven they were discussing what happens if you don't know which came first. Well, you don't know is a human problem. You don't know isn't a godly problem. So why would they be discussing in Shemayim something that's not relevant to them? That's what, if I had to play out this whole Ran, I would say that's the focus of the Ran. But he doesn't spell it out. So it's hard for me to say if that's what he's referring to.
Maybe that was the question. It bothered me. The question and the answer is, doesn't make so much sense without that. Like, how could you be learning about physical things?
Right. I agree. Meaning, I would like to say that that's what the Ran meant to say, but I have a problem. I'm bound to the words, and it doesn't say that. Meaning the Ran, to my mind, maybe something's missing from here. You know, I don't know if this is based on manuscripts, but to my mind, the question, everything the Ran says only works for me if we say his focus is the suffix. Because if it's a mitzvah, so mitzvah is spirituality. What's the problem? So so the mitzvah of a bris milah is not spiritual because it's in the physical body. So take all the mitzvahs. What do you care?
But why can't you say that they're dealing with a theoretical situation that What would man on earth have to say?
Right, yeah. Fine. But again, I don't know what's bothering him more about a negat saras than other mitzvos. What does the Ran want in his Hava Amina? He wants them only to be dealing with concepts of God, only to be dealing with mitzvos that are philosophical. Mm-hmm. That's what the Ran would like. And then he's saying, no, they could also deal with physical mitzvos. That's, I mean, mikara maikasavar or vasof maikasavar. Originally, what was he thinking? And ultimately, what was he thinking? What changed? So I could, reading the Ran simply, I have to say that what he originally wanted was that spiritual beings will only deal with spirituality. They shouldn't deal with any mitzvahs that are physical. It's not specifically this. I have a hard time with that, because to me all of Torah is spirituality. Yeah, it has a representation in the physical world, but the essence of Torah is spiritual. And to say that the Ran considered a different understanding of Torah, that only certain mitzvahs are spiritual, and tzaras somehow is not spiritual, I have a hard time with that. Specifically tzaras. Because the Rambam says there are two mitzvahs in Torah that are revolve around the miracle. He says all mitzvahs in Torah have an understanding that's down to earth. Two mitzvahs, right. Sota and tzaras. The Rambam says these are two mitzvahs that are spiritual. A guy sins, he's not nice to his friend, he says Lashon Hara, he doesn't lend his items out, he's miserly, he'll get a tzaras, he'll get this white blemish. It's not a physical illness, it's a spiritual illness. So does the Ran disagree with the Rambam on that? I'm saying if there's one mitzvah that's in the physical world that I really don't have a problem with, that they're dealing with in Shemayim, it's tzaras. I have a bigger problem dealing with other mitzvahs. Chametz on Pesach. Okay, what does that pertain to then? Fine. I'm saying the simple reading of the Ran is like you. I agree.
I'm saying why is that difficult? Because that's what the Gemara said. So he's questioning it on what the basis of the Gemara said. He said that's still a physical representation. If they bought something that was another mitzvah, you would question that as well. But the Gemara doesn't do that.
Fine, I agree. That's what the Ran says. The rest is Natan of Frankenthal talking, not the Ran. I agree.
Question answer is still hard to
me. Meaning, So his answer is, yes, they're connected to the physical world. So they could be dealing with physical mitzvahs. Fine. The question doesn't bother me as much, and the answer doesn't satisfy me as much. Whereas if the question is the way I was saying, that the question is more about human problems, like what do you do when you don't know, which is a human problem, so then I understand the question better and I understand the answer better.
Does he say the words that something that pertains to humans?
He says, yeah. But he keeps stressing, the way Moshe was saying, he keeps stressing that Tziras is a physical thing. He doesn't stress Suffolk is a physical thing. That's what he says.
It's very...
I agree. That's what he says. I agree.
The Heavenly Court, they're not checking themselves. They're not like, well, do I have Tziras?
Fine.
The theoretical, the subject never comes up.
The whole idea of Tziras is that we don't know. We have to go to Cohen to tell us the whole idea is Suffolk. And Suffolk in the series, not Suffolk. Like, was the white there, hair there before the white one? It's almost like a quintessential Suffolk.
So now we're only left with the second question. How could it be that in heavens God is saying the halachas this way, the souls are saying the halachas the other way, and then they say, okay, so how are we going to decide? We'll ask a human being. What's going on here? How are they arguing? How are they in a state of limbo, so to speak, without the human intervention, without Rabbi Bar Nachmani? But we could understand this agadic piece of the Talmud the way we've been writing. Although they knew that you'll ask me, what's the truth? Well, God knows the truth. There's no question that if God says it's tameh, that it's tameh. God said it's tahol, so it's tahol. Hayom uim tameh. But nonetheless, they ruled it's tameh. Being that when these souls were alive, who defines Torah? Not God. God gave us the Torah, and God says, now you have to use your logic and your laws of derivation to rule and tell us how the Torah works out. So their soul, when they were alive, well, they thought it's tameh. So now when they passed away, they retained that understanding. So then if you'll ask me, what's the halacha? Well, the halacha goes how the court rules. We can't have a prophet walk in here after Moshe and start telling us, well, it's this way. No, prophets don't intervene. God says, from the time I gave the Torah to Moshe, I don't intervene. Because the logic was, their logic had worked out that the halacha should be its tameh. When God says it's tahol, God's saying, I understand that it should be tahol. That doesn't mean you can understand it's tahol. You have to learn Torah and apply it the way you understand as best as you can. Vasha, and the other opinion, even though, yeah, God's not lying, he says it's tahol, he's right, obviously. But you can't go with God's logic. God gave us the Torah and said, now I want you to work it out from here on. Okay, so I have to do what I understand. That's what Hashem said. That's how the Torah is supposed to work. Just like when Rabbi Eliezer is arguing with the sages, all the sages are saying it's tameh. Rabbi Eliezer is saying it's tahol. Rabbi Eliezer says, if I'm right, the stream's going to go the other way. It starts going the other way. The tree's going to uproot itself. The tree uproots itself. The walls are going to cave in. The walls start caving in. A heavenly voice comes out and says, what are you arguing to Rabbi Eliezer for? He's right. It's tahol. The rabbis say, yeah, but you told us we should use the laws of derivation, God. God, you told us this is the way we should learn Torah. They couldn't give in to Rabbi Eliezer just because God agreed with him. Even though God says, they didn't have a question what God thinks. They knew God agrees with Rabbi Eliezer. Even so, they disagreed. Just like in this case, where, however, Rabbi Bar Barchana was privy to this conversation, he knew that God says this way and the heavenly court says that way. And you know what? He didn't say tahol because God said tahol. He said tahol because he was a master. He knew the laws of Tahara very, very well. And he was able to understand with his depth of understanding what all the other rabbis in heaven didn't understand. Remember, the heavenly court disagreed with God. So you have rabbis up there in heaven who passed away before him. And all of the heavenly court, together with God, they all agreed, who knows the laws of purity best? Rabbi Bar Nachmani, let's go ask him. Okay, but maybe Achrei Rabbi Matot is only if there were a court down here. There wasn't a court down here ruling.
Or maybe because
he's a Baki,
maybe?
Or, yeah. Maybe. ואף על פי כן אמרו לא בשמיימי ולפיכך אמרו מה נוכח נוכח אבא בר נחמני. Being that the courts in heaven don't decide, so then they said, so who will decide? Someone down on earth. Who knows best? Rabbi Bar Nachmani. ולא בד לו אחר מן האמת, כי לא נסתקו בזה כמו שכתבתי, אלא שהכריע ששך לאדם מחייב, כפי התורה והעמידות שנדרש בין לתהר. And Rabbi Bar Nachmani wasn't moved by the fact that God said one way. The reason Rabbi Bar Nachmani ruled Tahor was because using the laws of derivation, using his refined logic and his great tradition, he was able to come up with the right conclusion. The only reason they said Tameh was because they didn't understand well enough. But you know what that means? They were top rabbis. And if they would be in court down below with Rabbi Bar Nachmani in Rabbi Bar Nachmani's lifetime, Halacha would be Tameh. Think about that. It's just like the rabbis ruled against Rabbi Eliezer, even though God agreed with Rabbi Eliezer, and in that case, the court down below ruled against him. He says, one of two things caused them to rule the other way. Either they didn't put their all into it when they were alive, they didn't learn as well as they could have when they were alive, or because they just weren't smart enough. They did the best they could, but that just wasn't good enough. But let's say there would be a group of rabbis down below on earth who would disagree with Rabbi Bar Nachmani and say it's Tameh, even though technically he's right. If you ask me in a true sense, well, what does God say? What did the Torah mean? Well, that doesn't matter. Lo yasu amru b'maaseh l'heter al pi svarat hayachid. We wouldn't say it's pure just because he says it's pure. Lefichach tzitkei Torah shachat amru b'mitachriyah. The Torah tells us the formula is you go by the majority opinion. And even the individual who disagrees with the majority opinion has to go with their opinion. Meaning if Rabbi Bar Nachmani lived in the time that there was a high court and the high court ruled against him. And then a kohen comes and asks him and says, what's the halacha? Rabbi Bar Nachmani can't tell him, well, the halacha is it's tahor. He holds it's tahor, but he was overruled. Even though he knows they're wrong, because that is that fantastic mitzvah, the Torah tells us you may not veer from the guidance of the high court. And it seems from the Ran that it's not only the high court, it is the majority opinion, even in a generation where you don't have a high court. This is a chiddush of the Ran. It's not so clear that the prohibition of loch tasu is applicable when you don't have a high court. That deserves a much longer class, how you apply that. But technically, so what did we learn today? We learned that the soul is still connected to the physical world, and that's why the souls were busy with the mitzvah of Nigaim. We learned that although the souls differed with God, the halacha is defined by the human being down below, and the halacha is defined by the majority opinion. The fact that technically, if you'd ask Hashem, Hashem might say, well, I want it to be the one way or the other way. Nonetheless, Hashem, if you ask Hashem, well, what do you want us to do? Hashem would also tell you, I want you to go by the majority opinion. Meaning Hashem gave us a formula, and that formula defines the Torah. If you have rabbis who are fit to learn the Torah and apply the laws of derivation, so then they have to apply the laws of derivation and come up with the conclusion that their human intellect affords them, and that's Torah. Now, I want to add a point that it doesn't say in the Ran, but it's a critical point if we're already opening this topic. What's the difference between the rabbis before the Second Temple and during the Second Temple? Second Temple and the Gemara. Gemara and Savoroi and Rishonim and Achronim. What's the difference? So the difference is that the rabbis realized at some point that they're not on the level of their predecessors. In Moshe Rabbeinu's generation, they could use a Gzera Shava. They could derive things saying it says this word here and that word there. Okay, here's the derivation. They knew how to use Gzeira Shava. Very shortly afterwards, they came to a conclusion, we can't apply new Gzeira Shava. We don't have a good enough tradition. We don't know how to use this law of derivation with enough precision to say our own Gzeira Shava. They said, no saying Gzeira Shava unless you have a tradition from Moshe from Sinai. Why is Gzeira Shava different than the other laws of derivation? Well, it needs more precision. You could destroy the whole Torah if you misapply it. And they realized they didn't have that precision. So they forbade themselves from saying Gzeira Shava unless they had a tradition. As we go on in the generations, you find that the rabbis are willing to innovate less and less. And it's not because they're cowards, it's because they're truthful. It's because they realize that you have to have a very, very strong tradition and a very, very strong handle on the tradition and on the laws of derivation in order to apply them. And that's why if today a question would come up, what do you do with cloning? Let's say I could clone an animal. Is that animal kosher or not kosher? If I could create an in vitro fertilization, is that child a descendant of his father or not? Is he a descendant of his mother or not? Does he need to undergo gear or not? Well, we're going to analyze it using the sources we have. But we will not be able to say, let me open up a chumash, let me derive from this pasuk, or I'll make a derivation and I'll answer the question. Because the rabbis came to a realization at an early point in history that they no longer knew the laws of derivation well enough to apply them and derive new things from the Tanakh. So, what we're learning over here, that you go by the majority opinion, is true. And yes, the Torah wants the rabbis to apply the laws of derivation using a tremendous understanding of the laws of derivation and the laws of the Torah. But the rabbis themselves saw, as the generations proceeded, that they lost that great tradition, and therefore our capacity to answer questions using these laws of derivation has been limited. And so our analysis of halacha revolves around using their sources, using what they taught. We're not going to be able to answer questions based on the laws of derivation in the Torah. I can't open a chumash and start answering questions based on laws of derivation because we don't have that great tradition. And as the generations proceeded, the rabbis realized that they went down to an even lower level, to the point where even in the understanding of the Shas, I can't argue with a Rambam or a Ran or a Rush. That's the difference between Rishonim and Achronim. There's no magic line. The magic line was when the rabbis themselves realized they weren't on the level, and they said, now we can no longer argue on the previous generation's understanding of Talmud. And that's the difference between Rishonim and Achronim. And that's where we're at today. Yes?
So, who is referred to in Dvarim 17:11?
What?
In your day, to
the rabbis of your day, but the rabbis of your day also limit themselves to what they know as based on their understanding of their level. Meaning, there are things that you have to listen to the rabbis of your day, but the rabbis of your day also have the responsibility to know what's within their capacity and what's beyond their capacity. So they ask you, when you're on the moon, when do you keep Shabbos? We don't have a good source. We don't know. If we were living in the times of the Mishnah, Rabbi Akiva could open up a chumash, sit down and learn, and come up with an answer. If you're on the moon, I'll tell you when you keep Shabbos. Rabbi Akiva could figure it out from the chumash. I can't. No one could. I mean, from the days of the Rishonim, no one could open up a chumash. And even in the days of the Gemara, the Ramban says, you'll notice that what the rabbis of the Gemara are always doing is figuring out from the pasuk, where did the rabbis of the Mishnah get what they said from? But they didn't take a new question and say, okay, now we'll figure out the answer based on the derivation. What the Gemara is always doing is figuring out, well, where did they get what they said from? The rabbis of the Talmud are when they're applying the laws of derivation, it's not to innovate a new halacha, but rather to understand the rabbis of the Mishnah. Where did the rabbis of the Mishnah get what they said from? So the rabbis of the Mishnah knew the laws of derivation well enough that if they had a question, they could open up a Tanakh and figure it out from the laws of derivation. But we're not there.